Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Who Do You Think You Are? The brand new podcast series by A3 Communications, the data storage industry PR agency. My name is Fred Monson, and I am the founder and principal at A3 Communications. Today in the guest chair, we have Adrian Bridgewater, one of the best known technology freelancers in the UK. Hello, Adrian. This is going to be fun. How are you?
thank you, Fred. Very well. Thank you very much. It's freezing cold outside, so it's a very good excuse to be on your microphone and in your system.
You are very welcome. It's great to have you here. So let's get going. As a journalist, over the years, you have developed a wide-ranging set of specialties, including news and feature writing with different levels of technical details. You can write analysis, case studies, and lots of other types of copy. You're also a media trainer, and you even worked on the PR side of the industry. We would probably need much, much longer than we have to explore the full breadth of your experience. But we only have half an hour.
Yes, shall we start, absolutely. Adrian? Yeah. Did you? Is that your first question? How on earth did I do all of that?
No. My first question is coming now. So let's start from the bottom. Why did you become a journalist, and how long have you been in this line of work?
Okay. It's a huge question, really. But thank you. The reason you mentioned I was in public relations, and I worked for a big US PR company in the London and the Dubai offices for 7 years, in fact. So I do know what it's like to phone journalists and have the phone slammed down on me. So I know exactly how difficult that is. But I also kind of know what's right and what's wrong in terms of PR. I think that's partly what led me to do the approach I take these days. 30 years ago, you couldn't, just, it seems to these days, you can just be a blogger and you can be a journalist. And it wasn't that way 30, 35 years ago when I started. So I could have worked my way in, really, by public relations. And then I'd be speaking to editors and journalists, admittedly in Dubai at the time, sort of saying, can I, if you need a bit of extra work on your supplement, I'll write something. And I just ended up with this tiny, the portfolio. I mean, I worked for Retail News Middle East, writing features on the new, whatever the supermarket. I mean, it's a dreadful sort of tiny circulation trade. So to end up on some quite well-known titles is quite gratifying, and I never ever take it for granted. So, But in total, it's been about 30 years in media. I've done everything from I've been a transmission engineer in a TV station. I've been in marketing. I've been in sales. I've been a PR guy, and I've been a writer. So I feel old.
Well, you've certainly looked at the industry from most angles, it seems, which is really interesting. So, what do you think makes you good at your job, especially bearing in mind that you write about lots of different technologies and for different titles, which have different viewpoints, different types of readers?
To try and be humble without being cheesy, I think what I bring is that I don't always completely understand it. And I write about a very deep developer, programmer, data scientist audience, and I'm married to a data scientist, and she understands it a lot better than I do. And I think because I'm not necessarily, I was a hobbyist programmer when I was younger, but because I only understand so much, I have to go back and question and say, well, what did they mean when they were talking about kernel level structural re-engineering for platform X, Y, and Z, and all that kind of thing. So almost having not enough knowledge, it enables me to think, well, what is this company trying to say? And that's hopefully haven't come unstuck so far. But you have to be really careful writing in front of a programmer developer audience and not get it wrong. So that's partly why if I'm any good at my job, it's because I'm scared about getting it, it has to be right. So it's, otherwise it's got no value, is it?
Well, that's a very good reason, I guess, because a lot of people rely on the media to keep them up to date, to explain things. So if you were to get it wrong, I wouldn't say it would be a disaster, but it certainly wouldn't be a good thing. So you write features, but you also write news. How do you keep on top of what's going on in the industry in terms of trends, in terms of technology developments?
Yeah, there's a mix of features and news. I don't sort of really do breaking news like a 20-year-old reporter might do, because I think that's best left to the young guys and girls to do that. I think they've probably got a harder edge than me. I try and do slightly more discursive analysis. How do I keep on top was your question. And, you know, undeniably, it's a lot of it would be the PR funnel. And I don't mean funnel in any kind of disparaging sense of the word. There's a lot of it. Knowing, you know, having trusted contacts in the industry, you know, like such as yourself, obviously I talked to A3, you know, just hearing what you're able to translate from the vendors is invaluable. And, you know, it's really good when PR people have the ability to say, this is really big news, this might be peripheral, and this is news that we just have to put out, and we know you're not interested, or we know it's just we're paying lip service to it. It's that sort of, if it's when the, I know your question isn't how are PR people affected, but when we get that sort of information stream and it's channeled nicely by the comms function, then I think that does answer the question, because it enables us to know what to keep up with, because of, you know, you're helping to classify the importance of what we should look at.
Thank you. So, of all the people we've spoken to for this podcast and that we will speak to in the future, you're probably one of the ones that has the broadest range of topics that you cover, because you're not just a specialist in one or two. Are there any IT topics that you would like to cover, but you've never had a chance to look at?
I think that's a great question, and it's a really easy one to answer. And it's probably sort of endemic of my years in the industry and how I feel about, you know, if you spend a period of time doing this, and it would be, you know, it would be ecological, the circular economy, you know, tech for good, and human well-being. Those are the things that I've never been able to cover much, but we did a series on Computer Weekly about throughout the last year where we looked at circular computing, and actually not just recycling laptops, but actually, you know, right down to software contracts and whether big enterprise vendors had bought too much of too many seats, and they could resell. You know, we should be reselling virtual assets as well. So that's the thing that that's the thing that I most haven't done, and I should do more. I should try and spend my ripe years doing is just actually, you know, how we can benefit people and society and the planet, which is something I've never done. And I think when I looked at IT for good sites 10, 15 years ago, I was thinking, well, do we really need to have that? And of course, now, of course, we completely realize we do. So I think that would be the thing I need to do is what can you give back? I know some people find him a bit cheesy, but Richard Branson, Sir Richard, finishes a lot. I've seen him speak two or three times, and he finishes his events with, you know, whatever kind of organization you are, I think it was paraphrasing him, but he says something like, I think it's really sad if you don't have a higher purpose. And I think that just, you know, talking about the latest database management vendors platform is great, but, you know, what's it doing for us all would be, and are we pumping too much electricity into the data center that it's running on? So I think hopefully that answers the question. It's giving a bit back, really.
That's a really nice answer. I really like that, Adrian. So one of the subjects that you cover on a fairly regular basis, one of those is data storage. And that's why you and I and you and A3 Communications have been working together for such a long time. What do you find most interesting about this market, especially given that you could write about anything you want, anything you like, and yet you still write about data storage? What's interesting about it?
I think people are just compelled to understand what's going on at the
the backbone, the substrate layer of their apps. I think even, I mean, I wrote, without mentioning the vendor, I wrote a piece on graph technology, and the piece was called Why Your Next Database is a Graph. And people, and I did quite well. I was thinking, well, this is really data storage science at quite a deep level. Why would you care about how the relationships between different objects within a data model are interconnected? Because actually it might affect whether your app works well, because it knows if you happen to be using a location-based service and you're at a music festival and you wanted to order food, or, you know, it needs to think, you know, the applications need to have this quite rich layer of data underneath them. And how that's organized and orchestrated is, you know, probably on the one level, for a lot of people, really quite dull and real back. But at the other level, it's completely not. It's nothing works unless you know how this stuff works. So, it's a bit like, it's a bit like why are car mechanics interested in pistons? You know, because they want to make sure they know that that they've got precision engineering running to make the car looks beautiful on top. No one looks at the engine. Well, actually, a lot of people do. So I think it's, without being too cheesy, it's the engine that runs a lot of the apps and services that we use. And some people are actually genuinely interested in knowing whether they're, you know, nobody wants to be scammed or hit by malware. They want to know what's going on inside the box, because a lot of these computers are black boxes, aren't they?
They are indeed, very large ones at times. Looking ahead, in your opinion, what will be the most interesting development in the tech industry in 2023?
I think that's a deeply geeky question.
Well, you are,
but
a
I think
geek,
it will probably,
so that's right.
Well, yes, there's chic to be geek, but I wouldn't claim to be that. I think that it's got to be automation and AI. And that, from a data perspective, that's everything from database patching, updates, maintenance, process analysis to look for outliers and anomalies. But it's also the ability for these for systems to run not automatically, but autonomically, self-healing systems. Like, I believe is it the pancreas that does it for your body? You know, that's our autonomic nervous system. The computers have that same ability to now start to look for their own problems. And then there'll be, as we call it, human handoff, those things where exceptions need human intervention. And I think that whole process feeds through to process engineering, which is kind of going to be like, people talk about human workflows, and now we'll much more prevalently talk about how the workflow or how a process workflow works inside an IT system, and how much of that we can hand over to AI and machine learning. And then if you wanted to add a layer of icing on top of that, you'd say quantum. But, you know, we don't talk about quantum use cases for data structures yet, really, because we haven't really even got quantum as a service over the cloud. Although some
that's very
exists.
Interesting. And what about data storage? What do you think will be quite interesting in 2023 or over the next 12 months?
I think it could again be eco-efficiency. It could be how much wastage is there going on, how much application hoarding is there going on? Are we going to get to a point where the enterprises look at, you know, in terms of storage, is it short-term, long-term retrieval? That, you know, how I think there could be a more eco-efficient approach applied to what is put where, which I think that would certainly come into. Don't some of your clients talk about that anyway, don't they? That, you know, how much is it? It's a question of how much you're spending for each resource, depending on how much it's used. And because we're getting to the point where we talk about application outcomes, if storage isn't
being going through some input output mechanism to affect an outcome, then why is it being, you know, stored at X cost? So it should be, you know, put to a, you know, and shoved off to tape and all those kinds of lower level storage elements. Does that answer your question?
It does indeed. Thank you very much. So you've obviously been a journalist for a while. You know what you're talking about. You've also been on the other side of the fence as a PR professional. Today, you get inundated with offers of news, interviews, white papers, you name it. People are probably trying to shove it in your inbox. What advice would you give a data storage or even just a regular technology startup if they wanted to work with you? They're trying to get your attention. They're a small company. They don't have even a PR agency. How do they get hold of Adrian Bridgewater? How do they grab your attention?
Gosh. Well, it's the $64,000 question, isn't it? I think that, you know, you've got to persevere, haven't you? That's the main thing. There is a bit of a fire hose of, could be 200 odd emails, it could be more in a day. How would they get my interest if they were a data storage company trying to say they have a new approach? I would be quite upfront and say, you know, you don't, in a crowded marketplace, you're not going to, whether it be data storage or whether you're walking through a fruit and vegetable market, you're not going to get anybody's attention unless you've got the guts to go right up front and say, I want to convince you I've got something special, which is, you know, a bit like literally a fruit and veg trader would, you know, shout at you and tell you they've got the best. You know, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with sort of ebullient overconfidence, you know, because we're going to knock, that's our job to knock the gloss off that anyway. So if you come in with, you know, this might be of interest, then it's probably not, is it? So I think a bit of bravado is okay, a bit of confidence. I had one PR young lady in a agency sit across, and I was doing a sort of analysis of how to pitch, informal thing. It wasn't exactly media training. And she just said to me, I'm determined to get you to write about my client. And I thought, well, great. Thank God someone's got the, you know, I won't insert the euphemism of your choice. To
confidence, yes.
Yes, thank you. Cleaning that up. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, so I think you can be, I came from a sales background. You know, I used to flog classified advertising on the Sunday Observer newspaper. That's pretty hard work. You've got to have front to do that and confidence. So I think, and I hope this answers your question, but I think that's a lot of ways that answers how to, I sometimes say to people, you know, when they say, what's the secret of PR? Show confidence in your product. Don't say, you know, would you be interested? You know, you've got to be kind of quietly, you've got almost like less is more, you know, I know you're interested. Yeah. Should be the attitude, you know, because IBM, for want of an example of a very, very big company, they don't say, you know, oh, you know, we've got a new product, I wonder, you know, they're like, this is our new thing. So I think, and it doesn't matter if you're a small data storage startup. You know, I think you have to go in with that big news mentality. Why start small, even if you ask?
Yes, I totally agree. And this is something I tell all our clients, and I tell all the companies that come to Technology Live, our event. I always say, you have 15, 20 people in this room. They're very much in demand, all these journalists, analysts, bloggers. They're very busy, like all of us. Make it worth their time, the fact that they've taken a day to come to the event. Be confident, be excited about what you're doing, because if you're not excited, why should they be? Especially in the UK, where you know how cynical the media can be, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of really good heart now. I've always called myself a British American by marriage. There's a lot of good hard-nosed journos in tech in America and the rest of the world. But yeah, absolutely. The we did a on stage Dragon's Den style pitch thing with a startup organization at an event I attended in Jerusalem, and two of the presenters did it really well, and they were like, and this is what we've got, and here's our platform, and that's it. Like, you know, real elevator sell. And the one other, the third guy came on and started saying, imagine a world where you have, and just sort of told the story. And it was kind of, I felt terrible because I just started scowling like I was the nasty dragon. I just went on hoping that I was going to be nice to everybody, and this guy was ridiculous. So yeah, don't waste time.
Absolutely. Exactly as you say. So Adrian, you've mentioned America a couple of times. You travel so much. You're one of the journalists I work with who travels the most. And I know that you travel a lot to go and see vendors, for example, to go to trade shows. Many of our listeners are vendors who are thinking about maybe either coming to Europe to brief the press, or maybe inviting the press over to go and see them, meeting the press at trade shows in the US and around the world. What, in your opinion and your experience, what makes a good vendor trip for the media? And do you have a favorite one?
Well, you know, a good vendor trip is one with loads of organization, loads of admin, as dull as that sounds. You know, that we know where we're going, on what day, which hotel we're in, who we're meeting. We get the basic bog standard press releases before the show so that we can spend time focusing on the keynote and the interviews. Obviously under embargo, but, you know, just get that out of the way. One where we're not just, you know, for me, I tend to like to get to, you know, I want the CTO and the head of evangelism. I don't necessarily need the CEO, to be honest. The head of marketing is I'm going to be polite to the head of marketing type people. They're often come from a tech background, so they can be great. But I don't need the CEO because it's not the kind of thing I write. So it's one that has all that structure about it, and that, you know, you can, it's almost like a really, really good American diner menu. You can have anything you want and it's all laid out in front of you. Pick what you want now. So that's it's probably not a very good analogy.
No, but again, sorry, we go back to the fact that that will allow you to make the most of your time, right? To be efficient and respectful of the fact that you're going to be out of the office for quite a while in order to attend that event.
Yeah, and I think people forget that you lose about a day and a half on the plane and jet lag if you're in the US. 2 days, really. A day flying and a day being wiped out. So why not give us stuff to work on the plane? Why didn't they send us a load of stuff beforehand? And not many companies do. It's a heavy admin focus. And I mean, some companies even employ travel specialists, don't they? So that you don't even ever have to book a I think that can be a bit much. You know, I've got Uber, I can get my way from the airport. It doesn't really matter. So I think you can go overboard with it. Is your question the best event or the most professionally rewarding?
No, your favorite one, because you came away thinking it was a really good decision to attend, whether it's because they introduced you to new companies, new technologies, because you came away with an amazing story.
That's always just down to the people. You know, one of the best events I went to was one of the tiniest. And it was, unfortunately, it was a very big company. It was Microsoft. But they, you know, I had the head of development, the guy who was in the role for a long, long time. He was literally the lead event, and I think the lead cloud guy as well, and the guy that built GitOps. So it was kind of like, wow, I didn't think I'd get all three of those. So it's down to the, and they're all stars in enterprise software. They don't have to be famous in the industry sense. If you've got really good people, that can talk really well. I mean, I was at a data streaming event last August in Austin, and I'd never heard of The Evangelist, but he was brilliant because he was really, really vocal. And I said, an AI, low-code AI company event in Vegas last year, and it was the head of marketing, and she was incredible because she was like, she's ex-Pentagon advisor. She really knew how to talk. So it's kind of like who you get and whether you can sit down with them and they just download from. And they, you know, they don't have to know who you are and what you write about, but if they've had like one look at your Twitter profile or rough idea who you are, because they don't always have time to know who you are. And you know, journalists have egos anyway, but we have to.
No, fair enough. Adrian, I just realised we haven't really told our listeners who you tend to write for the most. Who are the titles that you tend to write for?
Which actual titles?
Yes.
Well, that does change year on year, but the stalwart in that group for me has been Computer Weekly, where I've been 13 years. I have two columns on Computer Weekly. One's developer, one's open source. Other people can write in them, but it tends to just be me. Let's just call it a column, on Forbes for about 8 years. And obviously people get a bit excited about being on Forbes, but I always remind them they'll get more readers on Computer Weekly. And this year I started working for two new titles because one dropped off. I don't know if you want to mention the one that's dropped a lot of us off. But I started working for Tech Republic and TechZine. Tech Republic, people would know TechZine, maybe less so, but up and coming. It founded by the guys that ran Computer World Holland. So it's in Dutch and English, two different sister sites. Obviously, I'm writing on the English one. And they've got some smart stuff that converts English stories into Dutch and vice versa. And then ERP Today, which sort of come out of sort of the publisher sort of came out of nowhere really as this maverick startup guy that people thought was you know, how can you do a print magazine, and it's gone big style. It's done really, really well, and I'm sort of in the team on that one as well. I'm taking the position of technology editor, but that doesn't mean that I don't do the other things too. It just means that if I'm doing something that's deep on automation and data storage in relation to robotic process automation, it'd probably be me that does it for any of the other journalists on the team. So I think that's about six. I think
that's enough.
Yeah.
So we're nearly at the end of our chat, but I have one final question. Mm-hmm. I believe you're planning to hang your journalist hat up soon. What are your plans?
I'm trying to. I'm not retiring. I just like to semi-retire. I put a thing on the, you know, the Facebook group they're all a member of, where people help each other comment on tech PR and journalism. I'm just trying to go to about, I don't know, 4 days a week or mornings and take Friday off. I don't know. I'm just trying to cut about 30 to 40% out of the week. So I would still do the majority of the things I want to do. I just won't be running around trying to get jobs writing white papers and things like that. Not that I do a lot of that. It's just one came in as an offer last night. So that's the plan. And the nicest thing somebody suggested was that you should fill all your, because we're so regimented, if you've worked hard for yourself for 15, 20 years as I have, you need to block out time for leisure. So it should literally be 3 o'clock reading, 4 o'clock walk, 5 o'clock gym, 6 o'clock Xbox pub, whatever. So that sounds like
the way I have fun.
Yeah, it's formalizing time off.
Because otherwise you never do it.
Exactly. No.
Well, yeah. That's it for this episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are? Thank you for joining us today, Adrian. A reminder for our listeners that you can find the list of podcasts in this series at www.a3communicationspr.com. I am Fred Monson. Thank you for listening and see you in our next episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are?